Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stas Ciolkowski.
Today is the very last day of January 2022. It's the 31st, and our theme today is precious things. So, Stas,
yes.
How was your weekend?
Oh, my weekend. It was a good weekend. We're in the house. Our big move this weekend was we drove to the library, which is 1 mile away, and I parked the car around the side of the building and waited while Terry went in and got our books and gave them some books that we had and got back in the car, and then we drove home, and that was it.
That was your big outing?
Yeah, we did watch football. Which was great. Was exciting. Good games, man. Good games. And it was interesting that the four teams that played this weekend, some of our storytelling fans probably did look at a football game. So the four teams that played this weekend, were only one of them was a team expected to be there, you know, from weeks ago.
Hmm. Okay.
All the top teams that were rated this and that and this and that, they got knocked off. And so it was exciting because these guys were playing for the Super Bowl. And so they weren't, you know, there wasn't any kind of fooling around. There was some really good football and some really bad refereeing. I know that I will read from one of my students, John Fales from 1974, who's a great dentist, specializes in children, and does one of those things where he travels with a group a couple times a year, and they help children that can't really afford the dental work. And but I know he will have a rant. I didn't even look at his posts last night because I didn't want to go to sleep with that in my head. But he has been on a tirade about the officials lately. And I did see a couple of plays in the game, and I thought, oh boy, John's gonna be on that guy. So anyway, that's one of the fun things about watching the sports, because you can, you know, fuss and discuss all the rules and how bad they are and everything, and claim that your team was better. It's, you know, that is one of the things I love about it. Also, Saturday, I got to watch the Millrose games. Now, you probably don't know what they are. But
I don't know anything about the Millrose games.
Millrose games have been going on for over 100 years in New York. And they do it in the garden now. And not Madison Square Garden, but they have a relatively new building for a number of years now, where they do all kind of things all year long. And the Millrose games are invitational track meet and they have people all the way from professionals, Olympians, and also down some, they have high schoolers every once in a while. And
wow.
I saw a young woman set a new high school record for 800 meters. And I saw some professional runners that were just phenomenal. And I love, you know, I coached track for 20 years, so I love watching. It's kind of weird because even when I do that, and Saturday it happened, I was watching it, and I had a reminiscence. I've had people say to me, how can you watch just people going around and around, and, you know, because indoor track, they're small tracks. they're, you know, usually an indoor track, the biggest it's going to be is 200 meters. So for a mile race, they got to go around the thing 8 times. And people who don't like to watch something like that, you know, once when I would coach and I wound up in a hospital, my athletic director had to take my team to this big invitational. And it was in Baltimore, and it was an indoor meet, and it was on a Saturday, winter time, and it goes on from like 8 in the morning till dark. And afterwards, I called him the next day and thanked him for doing that. He said, "I wouldn't do that again if they paid me." He said, "I can't stand, I don't understand how you can do that for 10, 11 hours. I said, "That's just crazy stuff going on." I said, "Yeah, I understand, because there are people who absolutely can't stand it, you know, but when you love something, you're willing to put up with a lot of stuff."
Well, I want to do a shout out to Andy Offutt Irwin for every week, over and over and over again. He sings for us to open the show. He opens with "Tarry Here." And I often wonder if it isn't driving him crazy to just sing the same song at the beginning of every single Enlightened Story Hour. But he shows up and he does it every single time. So
you think that might be, think that might be bothersome?
Well, I think he might get tired of it, but I guess he'll tell us if he does.
I don't know. I'll tell you something great about Andy. We did a workshop with Andy last weekend.
We did.
Yeah. And yesterday I was with Kevin Cordy, and with his debut program. I've been on that program, and every month I sign up to watch it and get involved. And Andy was one of the 3 storytellers on it.
I know. He was so excited about that.
Yeah. And did you watch any of it?
No, I did not.
Oh, it's a shame. It was wonderful. Andy and Judy Taroski.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know Judy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Judy told a ghost story that I thought was wonderful. There was, you know, it was like no one was getting killed, no one was getting chopped up, no one was getting crushed under the, you know, all this stuff. But it was really, did it so well. It was really a ghost story, you know, about feeling somebody's there with you and uncomfortable. You know, it's so well done. And, you know, she and Kevin, of course, worked on it for a while. And I know that the next time I see her do that story, it's going to be really great, even greater, because I just thought it was wonderful, you know.
what did Andy tell? He said he was going to do a brand new story.
Well, yeah, that's the whole idea. They do work on a new story that you've never done, you never performed before, so that, you know, and Andy's was... Aunt Marguerite was in it, and it was just, Andy's was wonderful. It was just all kinds of things, 20 minutes long. And, you know, with Andy, sound effects, there was a train involved in it. And there was trucking involved in it. And kids that would do the, you know, pull with their hand, reach up when a truck goes by to grab the air and pull down, and then the truckers would do it. And of course, Andy has that great vocal ability. Is that a vocal ability? His whistling and sounds. And so he could imitate the train, he could imitate the truck. It was really good. And I happened to mention to my wife last night, if I was gonna have time with 2 male storytellers, you know, if I could just say, I won a prize, and okay, you get to be with 2 storytellers for an entire day, who are they? It would be Kevin Cordy and Andy. I've spent time with both of them, you know, personal time and workshop time over the years. And I honestly do believe they are two of the most creative people in storytelling.
I absolutely agree. Absolutely. You know,
in fact, I am thinking of talking to Adam. I would like to see Kevin Duke speak sometime. I'm going to mention it to Adam. I think I have already, but who knows?
Well, since you brought up speak, can you tell us about Wendy coming up next week?
You know what? I should be able to. And I thought I had the poster for her performance. Well, Wendy Folsom. Yes. Who is now living in Montana and got married recently and is a wonderful storyteller. She relocated from Utah to Tennessee and went to East Tennessee State and got another master's degree. And then, I haven't seen her for a while, but she is a good friend. And she wrote not long ago to me and Terry and said, sometime after the new year, we'll catch up. Lots to tell you. we were surprised that she has this boyfriend. She got married and moved to Montana now. So anyway, and she's all excited, but she's going to be telling a story about her family. And she has two trans sons in her family. And she's going to be telling about, I think the story is entitled A Mother's Love. And
Mother's Only Love, A Mother's Journey Through Shifting Pronouns, Identities, and Perceptions.
I'm so glad you said that.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, when I met her 5 years ago in Mexico, one of the first things I learned about her was about her going through a difficult time as a mother with children. She's very supportive. Her marriage was pretty much over. And I got to know her through that week-long workshop in Mexico, and we became friends. Became friends with my wife, and we've kept in touch. We spent one of the storytelling festivals a couple years ago. The last one we attended, actually, we spent a whole day with her and part of the day with her, and had so much fun and everything. We're looking forward to doing it the next year. However, they haven't happened since we haven't gone back to the festival.
And do you know if Speak will be recording her story? Because I have a couple friends who are really interested in coming, but they can't be there that evening, and wondering if they register, will they get to see the recording?
I think if you contact Adam and ask him that. I don't know. I think he records some of the performances. He does.
I think he records almost all of them. And I did already contact him, but he hasn't responded yet.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I can do that.
Anyway, February 8th, 7:30. I'm looking for it. And I know it's going to be wonderful.
And speakstoryseries.com is where you can find more information.
That's great. I'm glad you were saying that, because I had my folder with all that in it. And I have a number of these folders. And I did have the right folder. It's the right color and everything. It's got storytelling stuff in it. However, it's not the right folder.
So it's the right color.
It's the right color and the right size, and it has stories in it. So anyway, and we still have the Speak story is still missing somebody for August. Adam is waiting, but I think it's the third person he's worked with who said yes at first, but then something came up and they can't. Also, Speak is going to be different this year because we're going to do January, February, and March online. Starting in April, there's going to be an online and then an in-person performance also. So okay. The storytellers will be doing 2 days for Speak, a Tuesday and a Wednesday. Also, and that the exact details of that are not out yet, but it's good for the storyteller because that's extra performance, of course, and then they get paid. And also it's good for the people who may not get to see the performance in person. They'll be able to see it online.
Very good. Is it okay with you if I tell my story first?
I think it's wonderful. Otherwise, because if you didn't interrupt, I'd just keep going on and doing publicity for the, all kind of things.
Well, I've kind of figured that out over the years. You know, it's been 4 years now. And if and if our listeners want to hear some of those older shows where we are learning, you and I are learning to interrupt each other rather than wait.
Did we learn
they
that?
They can go to Enlighten and go to Tall Tales. Dot
enlightenradio.org. It's a good thing that we're friends, because somebody might think that we like to get in each other's way, but we don't.
Well, it's so much fun.
We do have a good time. I can't imagine doing this with any other person.
Okay, well, this story is the one that I worked on at Andy's workshop middle of this month. Okay. Last month at the Griot Circle of Maryland monthly membership meeting, Mama Linda Gosk suggested that I share the story of my parents' connection to the Philadelphia Folklore Project and the art installation there that the Folklore Project calls If These Walls Could Talk. That installation is a permanent exhibit at the Folklore Project building in just off Baltimore Avenue in West Philadelphia. The walls of the organization's main meeting room were curated, collected, and preserved from the walls of my parents' dining room in West Philadelphia. In 1999, from their old house on Parkside Avenue, just before they sold the house and moved to a retirement community. If I can quote Mama Linda Goss here. Fanny Crawford needs to tell us about her parents' dining room. Her father mounted posters, photographs, newspaper clippings, political cartoons, book jackets, pasted them right to the walls of the dining room, documenting the history of labor struggles and civil rights campaigns from the 1960s all the way to the end of the 20th century. He created folk art, a room-sized collage from 40 years of Black history. The Folklore Project had a grant and used it to preserve the Crawford dining room walls. They had folklorists and museum curators strip down the walls and then installed them in the meeting space of the Folklore Project. Those of you who've heard me tell family stories may remember that my dad, Bill, was African American, born and raised in small towns in Western New York, Olean, Jamestown, Lancaster, outside Buffalo. My mother, Miriam, was from a Jewish family with origins in England, Austria, and Poland. They came from very different backgrounds, but growing up, they both saw a lot of injustice in the world. Both joined the US Army to defeat fascism in World War II. My mom as a WAC, Women's Army Corps. Her primary job with the WACs was administering Rorschach tests to returning GIs, looking for signs of trauma or other indicators that they might need help. My dad was a mess sergeant in a Black unit and spent much of the war on the island of Saipan in the Mariana Islands in the Western Pacific. Almost 4,000 miles west of Honolulu. He interacted with Japanese prisoners of war and indigenous Saipanese during his time on that island. He also watched and recorded through his camera lens the surrender of the Japanese general who had controlled the island before the Americans arrived. We still have those photos. My parents also had books in common, working in libraries and bookstores off and on all their adult lives. They met in Yonkers in New Rochelle, New York after the war, courted, and eventually moved to Philadelphia to start our family. Now, in October 2020 for the Griot Circle Love Stories program, I told a story about my parents that featured my dad's annual presentation of a gift box of Whitman's chocolates and a bouquet of red and white carnations to my mom on Valentine's Day, and some of the ways that they miscommunicated while still taking care of each other for the 50-some years they were together, forging new holiday traditions for our family, sometimes by trial and error, celebrating Hanukkah, Christmas, Passover, and Easter. Today, I have a family story opportunity that's both different and more complicated because it focuses on politics and community. Everyone's talking about the political divide right now in this country. The walls of my parents' dining room are representative of a very broad swath and spectrum of political history, covering at least 40 years of memorabilia. I grew up in three apartment buildings on Parkside Avenue, across the street from Memorial Hall and Fairmount Park in Philadelphia. The apartment building on the left in this picture that I wish I could show you, radio listeners, is the first apartment we lived in on the block, 1957 through 1961. And then we moved way up to the other end of the street, to 4288, but still across from the park. In 1967, I moved to Chicago to go to college. A month later, I received a letter from my mother. They were moving. What was going to happen to all my stuff? Well, all my stuff was right there. I had a room of my own in the new apartment. That's the building right next door in the photo of our apartments on Parkside Avenue. And when I went home for the first time, Thanksgiving break, to the new apartment, one of the first things I noticed were two posters my dad had put up on the dining room wall. A photograph of the great historian W.E.B. Du Bois and a vintage 1930s tan, brown, black and ochre labor poster, 30 inches wide, 40 inches tall, working men of all colors carrying pickaxes and steel hammers. My dad had hung those posters high on the dining room wall, so they stared down at us as we ate Thanksgiving dinner. Every time I came home to visit for the next 35 years, there would be new and interesting items to examine and study at dinner time. If you were looking at a photograph of the dining room as it appears now at the Folklore Project, or if you go to the Folklore Project in Philadelphia, you can see that the collage is composed of much more than posters. Bill and Miriam, we called her Mim sometimes for short, were book dealers, and over the years they acquired, besides books, what book dealers call ephemera, historic newspaper clippings, pamphlets, photographs, a lot of interesting illustrations and text. So you'll see a poster of, a wanted poster, actually, of Nixon and his Watergate henchmen. There's a little drawing of Julia Ward Howe, who wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. There's several Angela Davis posters, and one of the Wilmington 10 activists who were falsely accused and then convicted and incarcerated for nearly a decade before the rulings were overturned following a 1971 riot in Wilmington, North Carolina, over school desegregation. Wrongfully convicted of arson and conspiracy, the Wilmington 10, 8 African-American high school students, an African-American minister, and a white female social worker, were victims of the racial and political turmoil during America's civil rights era. If we had more time, I would say their names. There's a picture of a photograph of Barbara Jordan, who participated in the impeachment of President Lincoln and President Nixon. She was also the first African-American woman elected to the Texas State Senate, the first African-American woman from any Southern congressional district, and the first woman of any color to deliver a keynote at the Democratic National Convention. There's Alice Walker up there on a book jacket, one of her own books. There's posters from Wounded Knee protests. There's a couple of different pictures of Malcolm X. And there's a poster with the faces of my friends, Judith and Janice, who had an art show together at the University of Maryland in the mid-70s. I wanted to talk briefly about my dad's dementia, because those photos on the Philadelphia Folklore Project website of the dining room walls also include some sweet photos of my parents, 1999 or later, when the folklorists and curators were preserving and stripping the walls, rolling them up into these huge rolls to carry back to the Folklore Project and install them in the new space. My dad was beginning his long slide into dementia. And some family members, my uncles especially, my beloved uncles especially, really dislike the photos. They're outspoken in criticizing my dad's unkempt and way too long hair and beard and his very casual attire. No sport jacket, no tie, as they'd expected. My mom tried for more than a year to get him to a barber, but he liked his hair and beard that way, at least at that point in his life he did. The further he moved into old age, the more stubborn he became. When I was growing up, he was the bridge. He could and did talk to anyone and everyone. The point of every story he told was to get to know his audience so that he could find out what was important to that person and engage with them friend to friend. He rarely met a human being he didn't feel some connection to. There was always a small bit of back and forth, negotiations. He wanted my mother to be happy. As he faded, that was apparently less important to him. You know, people say that a good story describes a change, a different way of seeing the world, or how the protagonist or the person at the center of the story, which in this case would be me, of course, how that person changes. Well, people ask, what did my parents argue about? Well, they argued about whether individual leaders were good leaders and role models, or misguided and self-serving. They argued about whether to buy a very large and old single family house built just after the sesquicentennial, 1926 in Philadelphia. They eventually bought a different apartment building that was not quite so large. My mother was sure we couldn't even afford to heat that big one. They argued about whether to stay again for a week with Aunt Iris or pay for a hotel. We'd been going there every year since I was a very small child and staying with Aunt Iris for at least a week. And my mother thought that Aunt Iris had done her share and we could afford a hotel. And my dad said, no, I'm her big brother. She wants us to come. She loves us. I think eventually we did end up in a hotel. They also talked about how much risk was okay related to the Smith Act. The Smith Act was that piece of legislation that made it illegal to agitate against the government if violence was implied or intended. Now, I don't think either one of my parents intended violence against the government. They never talked about that. That was not something that appeared in any of the materials that I ever read from their homes, from their home, from their meetings, from the people that they talked to on these issues. But the Smith Act was basically used as a sledgehammer against organizations that people like J. Edgar Hoover disagreed with. And in the early 1950s, the leadership of the Communist Party went underground. And my dad was second tier for the leadership in Philadelphia. And when the leadership, the first tier was arrested and gone to trial, my dad went underground. I was 2 years old and I didn't see him very much. I remember one of my earliest memories is playing at Walter Lowenfels' home. Walter Lowenfels was a poet who was a very good friend of my parents. He had a home in Cape May, New Jersey. And I remember being there. I didn't know that that's where it was. And I didn't even remember Walter from that particular visit. I remember a redheaded boy standing behind a big wingback chair and teasing me, darting out from behind the chair to say, boo, or to say my name, and scaring me so that I was giggling and shrieking with joy and scared to death, even though I was having a wonderful time. But I think the reason that that memory is so vivid for me, at least according to my mother, is that we were visiting my dad at Walter Lowenfels' house. And I think that was a special time. When I think about my mother administering Rorschach tests to returning servicemen, I wonder about the impact of the Smith Act and my dad's being unavailable for those couple years on our early lives together. I don't have any deep thoughts about that, just kind of a wondering. Our theme today for the radio show is precious things, and those dining room walls are things, and I treasure them, even though they're at the Philadelphia Folklore Project now, and I rarely get to see them. It was a great validation for me. It was an awakening for me to see museum curators and folklorists so excited over those walls and want to install them in a sort of museum-like setting at the Folklore Project. I might not have known how precious those walls are, except for the tutelage and conversation with the Folklore Project. And it all came from my family. So those are precious memories, as well as things.
Wonderful. What a great story. That story gets better every time I hear it.
Well, let's hope so.
Okay. It is a wonderful story and something you can be very proud of. I, since you've been talking about that story, I have put your name in the list of important people that I have met in my life, and someone who's connected to people that are important in our world. And that's true.
You just did that today?
No, I did that. I did that a few weeks ago. I keep a list of people that I've met, or people that I've met on a second level through their children, or maybe a relative. that were people who are important in some way in our life. And certainly your parents are important. And recently I've thought a lot about your parents because I have, without getting into any politics or too much politics, I've been following the anti-Semitism throughout the world. Lately, there's so much being written, and it's not just in one place. It's in lots of countries, including our own country. Terrible, terrible behavior of people towards Jews in all kind of ways. And in following the readings over the past week, I've been doing stuff. I keep reflecting back and thinking this one kind of thought, because a lot of the stuff I've been reading has been written by American politicians or American historians. And I keep thinking, why aren't you railing and screaming and doing something about the way the African-American people, as well as indigenous Americans, the Native Americans, and so many of our people who are American citizens who came from other countries. Like almost everybody that stands on American soil nowadays is related some way to a person who came from another country, you know? And it just seems like if I were an artist, I would want to paint a picture of somebody pointing at the evil people who picking on the Jewish members of society. And I would find a way to have a mirror facing that person, so that in the mirror, somebody would be pointing back at them. And it would be many of those citizens, the African-Americans, the Spanish, the Irish, the Polish, the people who suffered because they were the others. Anyway, that's my political rant for the day. And the reason I meant to mention that is because your mom was Jewish, your dad is African-American. And I think it's wonderful that they were, that they got together, that they were married for so long, had such a good life. And when you mentioned something about them, in fact, a couple days ago, you mentioned something in the story about they're having disagreements. I thought, of course they're having disagreements. She's Jewish and he's a Black man. I can't imagine that they wouldn't have a disagreement at least once a week or so. Just, you know, but I've heard lots of things about your parents, and they always, whatever I hear about them, I always feel good. I like it that your father liked his long hair and his beard and felt good about it in some way, you know, because that really is a personal thing. And I understand his brothers don't want his reputation or his image to be sullied or anything, but I think him being happy as he was finishing his life, him being happy and able to do what he wants, that's what I vote for. So good for him. I'm glad he didn't get a haircut.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sash. Thanks for your feedback, too.
You're welcome. That is a wonderful story.
You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And our theme today is precious things. And we're more than halfway through. So we need to hear from Stosh. You got a story for us?
Well, you know, this is interesting. This was my idea. The theme was my idea. And I was like, I had a number of thoughts about it, but when I woke up this morning, what I thought is, like, I don't write too many original stories. I write stories about things that happened to me in my life, in my family and stuff like that. So I guess I don't write too many stories where I create what's happening. I have written some tales. I have a collection of those. However, so on this theme, I thought, I'm just going to talk about some things. And I thought, I'll get feedback from Fanny. And then if I work real hard, I probably can get a good story out of this. And I mean that sincerely. So So here's what I'm imagining. I'm pretty up in age, 80 years old. I will not be here for another 80 years. That would be awful. however, I have things that I save. And almost none of the things I save are really worthwhile. You know, they're not going to bring me money, or ancestors won't get money. So I was imagine if two relatives of some kind, either grandchildren, great-grandchildren, somebody in the future would come across, in a great story, would be a trunk. In most stories about me, it would be a cardboard box. A place where things were packed a long time before these young people. And I'm imagining that these young people would be, about John's granddaughter's age, maybe 13, eighth grade, 12, 13 years old. And they find this box, ask somebody about it, and that somebody says, oh, it's got a name on it, belonged to somebody in the family, some died a long time ago. And they decide to open the box and look at what's in it. And when they do, they find some things that are very interesting, and they're not sure of what they're about. But each one of the things has a note with it about where it came from or whose it was or something. And so as they're looking at these things, they're trying to imagine a man born in 1941, just before the United States got into the Second World War. That is a point about the Second World War and what we discussed about your parents, about the Jews, the African Americans. The United States did not get into the Second World War to save the Jews. They contributed to some of that by the war's end, but they did not go into that war to help the Jews. And unfortunately, history kind of has slid some things on our people, saying what a wonderful thing they did by helping and it really wasn't their intention. So. Anyway, so if I continue with this story, if I try to write a story, I will have to have, two young people. So I imagine it would be a boy and a girl. And the first thing they would look at, there's more than one box. And the first thing they would look at is a leather case, dusty, and a zipper kind of case, and large, sort of large. And so they open it up, and what they find in it is an accordion. An accordion, blue, and it has a name on it. It has a name on it, and it must be the brand name, R-O-S-S-O, Rosso. And there isn't anything with it except for a couple of songbooks. And when they look at the songbooks, the music books, one of them remarks, hey, I know that song is, I know that song. That was from some musical back in the 50s or 60s. And so they have a conversation about that. And they realize that there's inside that accordion's case, there is a small folder with some pictures. And there is a picture of the man playing the accordion. He's sitting in front of a bunch of children. And someone took a picture from the back of the kids. And the kids seem to be having a good time. And he is sitting on a stool. It's too bad you can't hear the music. Well, they're going to have to find somebody in the family who can tell them more about that accordion. The next thing they pick up is a draft card. A draft card from 1942. And the name on it is Paul Ziolkowski. That was the accordion player's father. And it just says that he is not eligible for the draft, which is good, since he's the oldest boy in his family. He's in his late 30s, and he had already served time in the Coast Guard. So he didn't serve during the Second World War. But then there is a funny, an object. It looks like it's a toy. It's a wooden hatchet and a toy. It has a date on it. And the date is September, can't read the number too well, it's the date, September 1950. Well, the accordion player was born in 41, so this was, it was 9 years old. There's a card attached to this wooden hatchet, a little 3x5 card, and it says that I was in the Cub Scouts and we were doing a patriotic meeting, and I was going to talk about George Washington chopping down the cherry tree. I asked my father if I could use a hatchet from his workshop, and he didn't like that idea of me taking a real hatchet to a Cub Scout meeting. And he said, look, why don't we do something else? We went down to his workshop in the cellar, and in no time at all, he had fashioned a wooden hatchet. And the two kids passed it back and forth. thought it was kind of neat, but they realized, looking at that, that hatchet was more than 70 years old. There was a small metal tag with a name and numbers on it. And it was attached to a 3x5 card. And it said, dog tags. And then the S was crossed out, dog tag. There were two of them, but one was lost. That was what the note said. And 1959, they were issued to the accordion player when he went into the army at the age of 17. The tag was in great shape, had his ID number, blood type, and his full name. Also mentioned religion. Had an R.A. on it, stamp, an extra for, or excuse me, a R.C. on it. Stood for Roman Catholic. That, there was a strange looking thing. It was like a, it felt like a piece of marble or something like that. And on it was printed the word Oracle, an Oracle of War. And in reading it, they saw that the accordion player It would be good, probably, if I knew his name in the story, that had been given this award. And it had a date on it, 2011. And it went on to explain that he had done some nice things for storytelling in his community in Arkansas, and that he had supported storytelling. And because of that, he was given this award for being an Oracle winner. Both the kids decided they should look that up and investigate what an Oracle award, where did it come from and who gave it to them. There is a small flat box inside this cardboard box, and it contained a number of wooden harps, not real harps, but small miniature harps, very nicely crafted. And it was interesting, it had stiff metal wire as strings, and there were five of them and five different styles. It didn't say anything on any paper near them in that box. And so the kids wondered, who made them? Where did they come from? And maybe that was something that the accordion player made or collected. So then the last thing they found in the box was a folder. And it's just the word stories was printed on the front of the folder. And they flipped through the folder. There were lots and lots and lots of stories. A few plays, some poems. And they decided that they were going to read those stories and that would give them some insight into the person who had collected all these things and thought that a draft card and a dog tag and a wooden hatchet made 70 or 80 or 90 years ago was something worthwhile keeping. And that's how far I got with the story so far.
That's lovely, Stosh. I hope you're going to work on that regularly so we get to hear.
I am because every once in a while I get an idea and I think, you know me well, so you won't even think this is funny. You'll just think, but that's Stosh. And I'll get an idea and I'll think, well, that's great. And I've done that many times. And unfortunately, many times in my life, I've done that, and that was the last thing I did about it, was say, oh, that idea was great. But as I have settled into being a respected elder citizen, I'm going to work on that because I like the idea. I need to create who those two young people are and more information about what's in that box, because none of the things in the box are very important, and they wouldn't be to anybody except the person who saved them.
I think you should talk to Alexandra and see if she would be an interesting person to be one of the kids, John's granddaughter.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it is. So, you know.
Or to several 13-year-old girls.
Yeah.
And make a composite.
That is. I'm definitely going to work on it. That's going to be the story I work on.
It could be Zoe and John.
Zia
and John, sorry.
Yeah, I thought of doing that, Zia and John, especially since since they're my grandchildren and we know each other, but I don't know them well. I know John better than I know Zia. Zia has had very little contact with me. She certainly knows who I am. But I could imagine John and Zia, or maybe their children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their children. That box. That's right.
I think their children would be good if they found that box because somebody was moving. Oh, I'm getting so many good ideas. Really?
Well, I can't wait to hear the next iteration.
Wow.
As you develop it.
And I can imagine that the next workshop we do, I will be working on it.
All right. Sounds good.
And before, I hope. Because I tell you, the last workshop last weekend was wonderful. I got some great feedback, and I worked on a story that I started at debut with Kevin Cordy, and that story about my brother was about some rough things that he went through in his life. And I decided to do a story that I worked with Andy about more pleasant things, and my getting mixed up with him in some things. And so I got lots of good ideas, and I had lots of their criticism, but positive criticism about doing this, which is good, because there are people who can do a story and write it one time, work on it a little bit, and then perform it. I can't do that. I need to have confidence.
Maybe you can perform it at the little retirement community where he lives.
Oh, where my brother lives?
Yeah, where Tony
lives. I don't have the courage to do something like that in a million years because that's a very special place. And most of the time, the people are, I don't know, Tony's nickname at that place is Tony the Tiger. And that's from the people who run the place. You know, it's assisted living.
Uh-huh.
When we visit there, a majority of the 15 people who live there are, if we come when they're watching TV downstairs, they look like they are a bunch of older people who are just sitting and staring into space.
Mm-hmm.
And
Has Tony made friends there?
He talks to a couple of them, but some of the people are not as open and gregarious as my brother is. Mm-hmm. You know, he's 83.
I bet they'd like to hear that story, though.
But, you know, I wonder. I'll have to ask.
Or a shorter version of it, anyway.
I have to ask the ladies who run the place, you know, the workers.
You have to ask Tony, too.
Yeah. Well, Tony, he'll say, you can do whatever you want, brother. Yeah. So anyway, that's good.
That's great.
Such a great show.
We are out of time. So I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasi Okowski.
We're signing off.
Yes.
The Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour today at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. It's been fun.
This has.
Weekly Storytelling Hour offers our listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging this listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for...
Oh, Swedish Blues. Blues.
Oh.
Okay.
Anyway. Hey.